This is Formula E Brief. Your big puffy friend was there. On this show, we discuss the highs and lows of Hong Kong, what Formula E can do better, and the surprise of a contact sport.
So the F1 season is over. And that is just about all we have to say about that. I don't think we need to expend much more in the way of oxygen discussing it. What is perhaps an amazing coincidence, or nothing like a coincidence at all, the Formula E season began 1 week after the Formula One season ended, which gives us, given that we've got a lot of time and a lot of energy, we haven't expended much on our Formula One coverage this year. And so we've got a lot of motivation to be doing things at the end of the year, which hasn't been the case in the past. We thought we would take a look at what Formula E had to offer, a serious look, like put a bit of effort into this, and see what Formula E had to offer us this year.
Yeah, if you've been looking at the Side Podcast website at all over the past few days, the past week or so, you'll see it's kind of exploded with Formula E content. Apparently we're a Formula E website now.
Well, it's worth giving it a proper try, because I know before the very first Formula E season, we were into the idea of it. We liked what they were selling. We were impressed by their approach. I know there was a lot of posts on Side Podcast. We discussed it in some podcasts. But I think once the season got going, once they started racing in anger, we found that we couldn't keep up with two simultaneous racing seasons, because it does terrible things to your body clock. Sometimes the races clash. You know, you have to pick one or the other. And at the time, we were doing a lot of Formula One stuff. And really, it was very difficult to do Formula E justice in the first season. Second season, third season, I think we just sort of, it just passed us by, didn't it?
No. Let's be honest. I watched a few of the races in the first season because Frank was in it.
Yes,
and
it
then
was.
He ruined his racing career and my interest in Formula E. So I ignored it since then.
So you've just been having an epic 3-year-long sulk.
Yep.
Interesting. Okay, but are you over it now?
I am.
Okay, that's good.
That's about as long as my grudges last. Just for future reference.
Righto. So we've put a bit of effort. You've done a heck of a lot of work, a lot of research into understanding Formula E in the past 2 weeks. You've done a lot of posts on Side Podcast. You've started another Formula E podcast. It only takes a minute, which is your 1 minute roundup of Formula E news, a bit like F1 Minute. You've done a whole bunch of those already. You've been doing posts on Formula E. You've done your research. You've got into it. You've heavily invested in it in the last 2 weeks.
I have. And what I would like to say is that all the content I am producing is not for Formula E experts at all, because I am an idiot and I'm very, very new to it. But what I am enjoying is producing the content. It helps me to learn about it, you know, and we have a winter and off season, and we're very grateful that the Formula One has finished, because it wasn't the best. So we've got energy, and I'm excited. I want to learn about this new sport. It's growing, and it seems like it is the future. It's only getting bigger, and it's going to be great.
So is it fair to say that this show is a guide, or maybe a transition podcast for people who have been following F1 and who are also interested in learning more about Formula E, to come on the journey with us, to learn with us as we investigate, because we really are Formula E rookies. We have no experience, we have no expertise in this at all, but we are finding our way and seeing if there's anything in there that may pique our interest.
May pique our interest.
We have new drivers. We have new names, which means can only mean new puns, right? Oh, God, help us. Go on, then. Kick us off. What have we got to discuss? We watched two races. What have we learned so far?
Well, the very first thing I want to say is that there's just great coverage. There seems to be access to a lot of stuff. Like I said, I was coming into this trying to, you know, gen up on what I didn't know. And there's complete races on YouTube, just available to watch whenever you like, in full. It's amazing. It's like a breath of fresh air, because obviously, being Formula One fans, we're not really used to people actually wanting you to see the content.
Mm. And Formula One, to be fair, is trying to open up, but it's doing it very, very slowly. Whereas I guess Formula E have come into it knowing that they're the underdog, knowing that they've got to generate interest and they've got to find fans. They've got to reach out and meet new people and you know, share what they're creating with as many people as possible.
Yeah, and the official website has loads of news and videos, and there's a new podcast this year. So it came out, I don't know, like an hour after the first race had finished. There was a 20-minute podcast catching you up with everything that had happened.
Amazing. That's incredible. Much credit to them for that. I think I should actually say that last year, the reason that I'm sort of interested in Formula One in the 2017-2018 season is that there was a race in New York, which was well publicized, and it was very exciting because it was the first time in however many hundred years or whatever that there had been a race in New York City, a motor race in New York City. And Formula E beat Formula One to the punch. And so there was a big, there was a lot surrounding that race, and I paid attention to it. But when I sort of looked into it to see whether or not I could follow it in any way, shape or form, Formula E was streaming the whole weekend on YouTube. Like all the behind the scenes stuff, all the build up, there was so much coverage. I mean, I think I just watched wall to wall Formula E for two whole days. It was incredible. And I'd never seen anything like that in Formula One. And that's part of the reason why I'm excited by it now.
And it does seem to be on 100 different channels on British TV. And you looked at the TV guide and said that it's there are 53 different Formula E shows or something across the weekend, which is just a ridiculous amount. But it has to be said, the Eurosport coverage leaves a lot to be desired.
We have watched Le Mans on Eurosport, so we know they can do good motorsport TV. But the commentary team, the pairing they had for this weekend, they were nowhere near as good as Jack Nicholls, Dario Franchitti and Bob Varsher, who were the alternative commentators on other channels. And I got to hear some of those during practice. So they covered on YouTube, we could watch free practice in the UK, but we couldn't watch the full race on YouTube in the UK. And it may well be for the Morocco event that we end up with some kind of proxy solution or VPN to make sure we can pretend to be in another country.
It seems like an odd lineup. That's an odd selection of three people to put together, but it really works.
It's genius. I don't know if somebody sat down and decided that would be incredible or it just sort of went that way. You wouldn't think any of those would work together, but I think Jack and Dario are my new David Croft and Anthony Davidson. You know how much I love those, right?
Yeah.
Like 10 years ago or whatever. They were F1 for me. And I think those two are Formula E for me. And Bob Varsher's new. We don't hear a lot of him in the UK. It's a great trio. They make a great commentary trio. And it's a shame that we in the UK, we couldn't hear them live. Channel 5 were running on tape delay. And Eurosport were the only place we could watch it live legally. So that's what we did. And it was a disappointment compared to what the alternative might have been.
Another thing we're not quite used to that Formula E does is having all the sessions of one race in one day. So all the free practice, qualifying and the race itself. That didn't work so well this time because the time zone meant that, well, I could only watch the race and had to just read up quickly what had happened before. But I really like the concept of it all happening and that's it. You're done.
It was an unfortunate time zone for us. For the opening Grand Prix, because you want to learn as much as you can, you want to watch as much as you can, and free practice started at midnight, I think. Qualifying we completely missed, and then we had to wake up at 6 a.m. for the race. So it's a very compressed day, isn't it? It's like there's an awful lot to be packed in, which I kind of like, because if a driver has a problem in free practice early in the morning, say they damage their car, there's a heck of a rush to get something ready for the qualifying for the race. Like you could ruin your day with just a bad practice run. I think it could sort of gives a lot of energy to the event. Like everyone, you know, is non-stop. Free practice was just, it was chaos. Everybody was trying to, you know, there's only 40, 45 minutes or something on Sunday, free practice 3. And that's all you get. That's all you're going to do on the second day. How many Formula One practice sessions have we watched where there's an empty track, where nobody's come out, where nobody needs to do a run? And I don't think I saw an empty track at all during this weekend. Like, of all the sessions and all the things we managed to catch, at no point was there just an empty track and nothing to see. It was always something going on.
Well, you were really excited after the practice session before the second race. And I don't think I've ever been excited at a free practice Formula One session.
No, it was great. I mean, they're really throwing the cars around. They're trying to find the limits. I guess it may well be, it's hard to tell because, you know, we're rookies at this and maybe it will settle down. But there were drivers in the field who weren't experienced in Formula E, and so they had to get a handle on the cars very quickly. There hasn't been much testing. I think maybe in Valencia there was a test, but that's not a street course. The street course was bumpy, and the cars are reasonably hard to set up. They're also new cars, so the teams are dealing with the new cars. You've got changes within the team, manufacturers like Audi coming in. You've got drivers who aren't experienced in Formula E. They're trying to get the most out of it. So you might find that as it gets near the end of the season, it's not as crazy and it's not as exciting. Maybe it was just a one-off, but I very much enjoyed everything that I saw this weekend.
It was a doubleheader with a race on Saturday and a race on Sunday. It was a bit weird because the first race was 43 laps and it was all-out craziness, you know, drivers overtaking each other and crashing here and there and everywhere. And then the second race, it was only 2 laps longer, but it seemed to make a complete difference to the way they went about it. They had to be fuel-saving and it was all about strategy. And, I mean, I don't know why there were that extra 2 laps, unless that is what they want to do, differentiate between the 2 days. Mm. But I did think it was really interesting how something so small can make such a big difference to how a race comes across. But I even enjoyed the second race, even though it was a lot calmer and you might say a little bit more boring. But I liked it because it was about the energy saving, which is just like refueling in Formula One, which we love.
Okay,
and because they only have one type of tyre, there's none of that trying to keep on top of that strategy either. So it was quite simple for an idiot like me to follow.
It was a breath of fresh air coming out of the Formula One announcement from Pirelli that they're expanding their tyre range to all the colours in the rainbow now. Pirelli and F1 are trying to very much be the centre of attention, and they don't seem to like it when nobody talks about their tyres. Michelin in Formula E seem to be far more content just to be there. It's like, we're here too. You know, you want tyres? We've got tyres. You want tyres for the rain? Well, we've got those. You want tyres for the dry? You want tyres for rough tracks? You want tyres for abrasive surfaces? We've got it all covered with one piece of rubber. You know, we've just got one compound and that's it. We're just going to bring it. It's going to deal with everything that you throw at it. And we don't need to be the headline. We don't need to be the story. Your big puffy friend was there, of course. He's larger than life.
Yeah, I was going to say that actually probably the reason that Michelin don't need to be shouting is because they have a big mascot who is on the podium waving, being ridiculously cute. I do love him. I do love Bibendum. Pirelli don't have a mascot. Maybe that's what they're missing. It wasn't all good. I mean, every motorsport has its problems. And this one, they were two very embarrassing problems. Two races, two race starts, both of them failures.
Go on.
Well, the first one, they had to... The cars did get underway, but they only managed, I don't know, half a lap, a lap, before there was a pile-up at one corner, a traffic jam, because they couldn't actually get round the corner. So that caused a lengthy red flag delay. And it seemed like it took so long because the FIA didn't really know how to handle it. They didn't know what order the car should be in or how they were going to restart. And that was quite annoying. It turns out they don't have red flags very often. It was the first red flag Formula E has had in a very long time. So they've probably forgotten or don't know how to deal with it. But then on the second day, the starting lights failed. So they had to start behind the safety car.
Mm, yes. There's no glossing over either of those problems. I mean, in street racing, you're going to get situations where an accident causes a traffic jam. I think we saw it in Macau not too many weeks ago. One false move in a very tight and twisty street circuit, and that will happen. What you'd like to happen immediately afterwards is for organisers to know exactly what they're doing and to get everything restarted as soon as the track is cleared, and that just didn't happen. One thing that I think worked in Formula E's favour is frustrated as fans were at home and wishing they would get on with it. Alejandro was pacing up and down the pit lane saying exactly that to the media. I think, you know, it felt like he was on our side and wished they could just get the damn race restarted.
Yeah, he is our people.
Yes, so that felt good. The second problem is, I think, much bigger. I don't know how you successfully start one race and then fail to start the next one when the procedure is exactly the same. And that took, again, it just took so long to fix the problem.
The other thing I was a little bit disappointed about was actually fan boost, because I was quite excited about it. You know, it's a unique thing, voting for people, influencing the race somehow. But actually, I think I only saw across 2 days, I only saw one person use it. And it didn't seem to have any effect whatsoever.
No, it's not as obvious as something like DRS. And it's a nice alternative, I think, if you're not a fan of DRS and F1, but you understand that these cars find it hard to, you know, it's hard to pass an identical car on an identical track. And you sometimes need something to give you that extra bit of pace. And fan boost seems like it might be the right solution. But there are so many rules around it. You can't use it until the second half of the race in the second car when you only have so much energy available. It seems like they've made it very constrained, where it would be better if it was more free. Like, if fans are going to the effort of voting for their favourite driver, and I think it was like 5 days before the first race you had, you know, and you can tweet every single day for your favorite driver, and you can put a lot of effort into it, and it feels like fans can get behind it. But when you go to all that effort and then it just gets wasted, or you don't see it because the cameras don't catch it, or it didn't really have any influence on the race at all, you do wonder if maybe next time you maybe just won't bother.
Yeah. And I felt during the races we were missing some of the radio content that we get in Formula One. And I think they had issues with the communications, didn't they, because of the buildings. But most of your city circuits are going to have buildings around them.
Yes.
So they may have to do something about that. And you were quite upset that they weren't really editing the radio either.
I have issues with Formula E radio. And maybe, like, on paper, it seemed like a really good idea, right? Formula One filters the radio, someone edits it, someone puts it together. You can manipulate that radio. You can sell a certain kind of entertainment with that. And that could be perceived to be a problem. It seems like Formula E have taken the opposite stance, and they just broadcast everything live without any filter, which is a concern. I think in practice, Alex Lynn was effing and blinding that he'd missed third gear. Like, here's the thing. One of Formula E's greatest strengths, I think, is that the cars are quiet.
Yes.
You can go to a Formula E race, you can sit in the grandstands without the need for earplugs, ear defenders, or any risk of ruining your hearing. Therefore, Formula E is the ideal motorsport for families with small children.
Yeah, we saw lots of pictures on the TV of kids just running around, leaning up against the fences, no ear defenders necessary.
It's pretty much the only motorsport where that's true, where you don't have to constantly keep an eye on your kid to make sure they've got the ear defenders on, that, you know, they're still going to have some hearing left at the end of the day. And therefore, Formula E should be targeting parents. It should be saying, you know, it's safe. We're not going to destroy your children's hearing in the same way that Formula One definitely will if you don't, you know, if you're not careful. And then to then turn around and then broadcast all of the swearing, like radio swearing, that may as well be what, you know, that's probably the name of their channel. It's just, you know, it's terrible. I mean, it really is quite, the language is quite strong. And you understand that. You don't want the drivers to have to self-censor themselves. It's an emotional sport, and, you know, they've got a whole load of other stuff to be worried about. But it seems like somebody could just bleep it or cut it or do whatever, you know, without editorializing it, without, you know, adding undue influence. Just bleep the swears and just make it family friendly. It's not a huge ask, I don't think. And I think that's something that Formula E can do much better than it currently is.
The sound of the cars is probably one of the most controversial things about the sport. It's a reason why plenty of people don't like it. But I really, really loved it. I think that the fact that you can hear everything, I mean, those cars are tanks. They are bumping into each other like I've never seen. And you can hear everything, squeaks, bumps, crunches. And it's so visceral to hear it all. And it feels like you're really getting involved with it. I thought it was brilliant.
I'll tell you what I find. When I know people go on and on about Formula One and the lack of engine noise recently and how the V12s were so much better. But really loud engine noises that echo off of the Swiss Alps or wherever, I don't know, the Austrian Alps when we're at the Red Bull Ring. You know, the kind of echoes and the reverberations and delays you get from an incredibly loud sound, it puts distance between the fans at home and what you watch on television, because it sounds like they're a long way away. It sounds like they're in a very big space. Whereas with Formula E, it sounded like when two cars came together, it sounded like they came through your living room. It sounded like they crashed into your house.
It did, yeah.
It was really close. And you don't get that with really loud sounds. And so you get that there's a nice contrast in there. You lose some emotion from the engines, but you gain so much more.
It does feel like you can, because you can hear it all, it actually sounds like they're making an effort.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And yes. And so you almost know more that the driver is really putting their all into it.
Yes. Yeah. I think I'm totally convinced that Formula One fans that want louder engines are all crazy. They are all crazy. They're all wrong. they're all going to go deaf, and they're all crazy. That's my take on it. I think Formula E engine, the electric engines are the future, the sound of the future.
Two other things I wasn't totally happy with over the weekend. I thought we were promised grid kids. They didn't appear.
In Montreal, which was the last race of last season, I think the event organisers, not Formula E, but the local organisers, swapped out grid girls for local karting talent. So children or people who are aspiring to be motorsport drivers of the future, boys and girls, holding the the placards, the number placements for the grid. And it seemed to work really well. There was a great response from fans. I think made Formula E look amazing. And following in the weeks that followed, I think Alejandro said, it's a great idea. We're going to use it. We're going to use it next season. It's coming back. And I was looking forward to that. And we didn't get that this week.
No. Jack Nicholls on Twitter said he thought it was a local promoter thing and isn't going to be a regular issue. But, you know, if you Formula E, just put your foot down. Say no, grid kids or nothing.
Yes, it would have been better. It's a more family-friendly thing, right? Mm. You want, it's perfect. It's the perfect.
You want your kid to be watching saying, I wish I was there.
I want to do that. I can be that person. I can be a person on the grid. I can be a motorsport talent of the future. I want to get picked for that. And it's another missed opportunity. There's so much untapped potential in Formula E still. And I'm sure they're working on it. I'm sure there are good people who don't need us to tell them this. I'm sure, you know, they've got their own ideas and they are getting there, and it's all very complicated stuff that just takes the time to, you know, to come to fruition. But I feel like it's just a couple of times you could just say, you know, just think about it a bit more, and you could make this so much better. Because the grandstands were not packed. Let's not pretend that this is the most, you know, the most popular motorsport in the world. They were desolate during practice. And they were, you know, there were people there during the race, but not a huge amount of people. And it's in a city centre in a massively populous metropolis, isn't it? I mean, Hong Kong is huge.
Yeah.
It's surrounded by skyscrapers, and it's on a weekend, so it should be more popular than perhaps it is. And I suspect it's not, because they're still missing opportunities, which are right in front of them.
And then the other thing is, the stewards getting involved right at the last minute and stripping people of their wins post-race. That's just, I mean, that's a standard motorsport complaint. But yeah, it was disappointing for our first weekend to end with the person on the podium not actually being the winner.
Yeah, our first look at Formula E ended with an appeal which has gone to the stewards, which I don't think has been resolved at the time we're recording. I guess it has to go to the FIA or something now.
Yeah.
It's put a damper on the final, like, you know, the overall impression of it. It's the race didn't start properly, and also it didn't end properly. So that's not good. But, you know,
everything in between was brilliant.
I think we found some, because obviously it's a different motorsport, and in the past Formula E was accused of being a retirement home for Formula One drivers. So some faces were familiar to us. We've been through a lot with Buemi. Verne was obviously a staple in Formula One. There was a lot of drivers. Heidfeld, we've already talked about on podcasts long ago.
Mm.
So you have some familiarity, but you find new drivers. We find people we've never heard of before.
Yeah, I mean, Mortara is my new favourite.
Is he?
Yeah.
He was a standout driver for both days. He did a really, I mean, until he lost it on the final lap. But, he, you know, apart from his one mistake, he was a standout driver. I'll tell you what the other thing is. That, I mean, it's nice to have familiar names, but it's also nice to have a change. We've been doing side podcasts now for, I guess, 11 seasons we've covered. In that time, we haven't crowned 11 Formula One champions. Raikkonen in the first year, and there was Button in his brawn, and last year, Nico Rosberg was world champion. But apart from that, Lewis has scored 4, and Vettel scored 4. So 8 years of repeat drivers winning the same title again and again, that's not a great strike rate. And what you get with Formula E is a guarantee that neither Vettel nor Hamilton are going to win anything, which is fantastic.
That's all you ask.
That's pretty much. I mean, the thing is, you go in, you look at Formula One in 2018, you say, well, it's going to be between Hamilton and Vettel. Whereas at least here, I mean, even in Formula E terms, the favourites, the two drivers, the two championship protagonists didn't do at all well.
In the small amount of research that I did watching some of the coverage of previous events and stuff, it felt like Buemi just dominates everything, but I didn't see him all weekend.
He crashed that in practice and was rubbish. He broke down, his car stopped in the first race, and he crashed on the second day. And Degrassi, who is the reigning champion, he got the weekend handed to him by his rookie teammate. His less experienced teammate. You know, that's amazing. That's brilliant. Imagine, like, Bottas turning up into Formula One and just showing Hamilton the way. And so it seems like there are more opportunities for drivers to shine in Formula E. It's less of a car championship.
also what it is, so you're watching a Formula One race and Lewis is winning and you're like, well, you know, Bottas could come up and catch him, or something could happen. This could happen. But you know that isn't going to happen and he is going to win. Mm. But when you watch Formula E races, even if someone was dominating, it really does feel like anything could happen. Yes. You can't just take your eyes off it because they could crash in the blink of an eye.
Every corner matters. It very, very much does. And there's not so much of a racing line. You don't really, I mean, there is an off, you know, there's an off line and there's a dirty side of the track and stuff. But because it's temporary, because it's street circuit, it never really gets a chance to rubber in. And because the tyres aren't super sticky tyres that aren't laying down rubber in the way that Formula One tyres do, you don't get these racing lines. So you can, you know, fly up the inside of somebody and still stop and still make the corner. And you can bash these cars. These are really, really solid cars to race. You don't, you know, you tap two cars together, they don't explode in a shower of carbon fiber. They mostly can keep going with bits hanging off them and you know, things break and stuff. But you can, you know, it's a bit of a contact sport, you know, which you're not used to in Formula One. You can muscle your way past if you need to. And that makes a difference too.
And so I am really excited for the next race. It's actually a shame that it's not till January.
The season is shorter. So how many rounds have we got? 14?
There are 14. A couple of them are double headers.
So it's a manageable season. That's the important thing. It's not going to kill us to cover this.
No.
If you're interested in Formula E, I mean, it would be remiss of me not to promote your Fat by Fat Box coverage. Because even though you've never paid much interest in this sport, you did an exceptional job of doing lap-by-lap coverage. It's 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
You know, you were barely awake. You were covering a sport you barely know. And I still think, I was reading it back this afternoon, it's such a great lap-by-lap coverage. If you're interested in Formula E and you're thinking of, you know, paying more attention to it in the future, you're going to be doing the Morocco race. We're going to follow the next race for certain.
Yep.
We're going to follow it at least until the F1 season starts next year, and then we'll see if we can balance two or one or the other has to take a backseat. But I think that, you know, keep an eye on Side Podcast. There will be more Formula E coverage because we're into it, right? We're excited by this.
Yeah, it's great.
I think our first impressions were more than met, and I think it's worth the time. Did you feel like it was worth getting up at 6 a.m.?
I did. I thought it was worth getting up at 6 a.m. 2 days in a row, and I would probably do it again tomorrow if I had to.
Good Lord. And what was your personal low light and highlight?
Well, my low light, I think we've already touched upon, a race starting behind the safety car for no good reason. But my highlight actually is how the drivers seem to interact a little bit more with each other, because during qualifying, I think they were all watching one TV screen and drivers from different teams were all stood next to each other and chatting, which was fun. Mm-hmm. And then also after the first race Dario was interviewing Heidfeld, who was saying he was furious with Vern, who was literally stood just off camera.
There's nowhere to hide.
No, I'm furious with this guy. I mean, I've talked to him, but, you know, I hate him. And he's right there.
As Jeff was like,
it's amazing.
Yeah, I don't care. But yeah, okay, my low light, actually, I don't think we've touched on yet, is I felt like the live timing solutions or support you have watching the timing screens at home, very janky. Very old school, nothing like we've come to expect.
We have been spoiled a little bit.
We've gone back in time on that. The driver tracker thing works at about 4 frames per second.
Mm-hmm.
It's virtually impossible to read the race control messages if it scroll very slowly across the bottom of
yeah.
I'm bored. You know what? That's Jesus.
No history of it. It's there and then it's gone.
Lifetime in needs a big revamp. But my highlight is the fact that I didn't see or hear Christian Horner talking about things that were none of his business all weekend. And that's all I asked for. That's basically all I need in life.